Hi, thank you for joining us at U Inc. My name is Rhea Greif, and I'm here with you today, as I am every week, to help you build the most important brand in your life, which is you. When we talk about building, we use tools, and the same goes for building our brand. Some of these tools you will find helpful today, and some you will put in your news desk until you need it for something you're working on. Today's tool is comedy, and why it is important to have comedy as a part of your life and in business, and how to cultivate humor in your life once I've demonstrated to you that it is a great tool for your brand. So don't stop, get it until you chatty head and watch the way I navigate. In today's high-stress, high-powered lifestyles, we have lost the ability to take things lightly and to laugh at ourselves. In the U Inc. we did live at Community Festival with our very own underwriting manager, Jim Coe, we discussed that as a society, we have gotten to a point to expect everything to be 100% perfect, or we will be angry, disappointed, or worse, abandon ship. Humor, instead, and lightening up can allow us to be 100% satisfied when each of these five areas, or buckets, if you will, of our lives are only 80% full, and thus we can laugh the other 20% off. So these cognitive shifts can happen with humor. How? Laughter, as it turns out, changes our brain chemistry. In the book Clowns and Jokers Can Heal Us, Comedy and Medicine by Dr. Albert Howard Carter shows us this connection and that the benefits of laughter are many. Laughter reduces the level of stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline and increases the level of health-enhancing hormones, including endorphins and neurotransmitters. Laughter increases the number of antibody-producing cells and enhances the effectiveness of T cells, which strengthens the immune system and reduces the physical effects of stress. The Laughing Cure, Emotional and Physical Healing by Brian King, also a doctor and a comedian, actually conducts humor therapy seminars that are attended by more than 10,000 people each year. Research shows that sustained laughter enhances all aspects of our well-being. Physical release. Have you ever experienced that cleansed feeling after a good laugh? Laughter provides a reliable form of physical and emotional release. Internal workout. A good belly laugh exercises the diaphragm, contracts the abdominal muscles, and even works out the shoulders, leaving muscles more relaxed afterward. It also provides a great workout for the heart. Distraction. Laughter interrupts feelings of anger, guilt, stress, and other negative emotions more effectively than other types of distractions. Perspective. Study shows that our response to stressful events can be altered by whether we view something as a threat or a challenge. Humor can give us a more lighthearted perspective and help us view events as pleasant challenges, therefore making them less threatening and more positive. And there are social benefits of laughter. Laughter is contagious and it connects us with others. As you bring more laughter into your life, others around you are more likely to laugh and realize the benefits as well. When their mood is elevated, social interactions with them will improve, reducing your stress levels even more. And you can find all the books and the articles mentioned in our program on our webpage at wcbe.org, as well as our podcasts. And you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, as well as U Inc. Radio. So what actually is laughter? An article in the Harvard Neuroscience Institute states that it is when you are surprised by something. When a comedian delivers his punchline and, quote, when the punchline hits home, your heart rate rises, you jiggle with mirth, and your brain releases feel-good neurotransmitters, dopamine, serotonin, and an array of endorphins, jokes work because they defy expectations. The surprise aspect of these tales kicks in the frontal lobe search for pattern recognition. The punchline moment shifts one's orientation away from information processing toward an emotional response arising deep within the nucleus accumbens. This response is then tagged for an overall relevance check. And the prefrontal cortex, which is part of the frontal lobe, deems the information attention worthy. It dedicates more processing power to it, along with conscious awareness. If the information remains relevant through the punchline, the brain shifts its response to its pleasure and reward center, which in turn triggers a guffaw. Or, as I would like to say, bottom line, laughter is cheap, easy, chemical-free, and so very good for you. The only thing good about the good old days is that they're gone. And that is a quote by the recently deceased comedian and civil rights activist Dick Gregory. Juggling away, laughing all day. Oh, to report you to the gnome office. Gnome office. I'm a laughing gnome and you can't catch me. I'm a laughing gnome. Our next guest describes himself as an overseer of all editorial planning, photography, writing, and design for 614 Magazine, a full-color, glossy, free lifestyle magazine with a printed circulation of 25,000. He has other publications as well. Travis Haywisher is a man about town, an influencer, a journalist, and a comedian with regular shows such as The Monthly, Everybody is a Comedian Showcase, and like many of us in Columbus, he came to a house date and never left, and today is instrumental in dispensing civic pride all over our fair and quickly growing city. Mr. Haywisher has managed to keep us all abreast of all these developments while elevating the quality of journalism and integrity. When not working hard at his publications or hardly working at his comedy shows, he is a self-proclaimed avid beer connoisseur and consumer. In addition to being editor-in-chief of 614 Magazine, he is also the board member of the Dick and Jane Project, a nonprofit that hosts collaborative workshops where middle school students are partnered with local bands to create radio-worthy songs. Also, Comedy Pop-Up is his newest venture, where he will literally pop up and do comedy shows anywhere you will hire him to be. Welcome, Travis.
Thank you.
Okay, so I want to settle something here and now that I know a lot of listeners have the same problem. So when we were working on a date to set for this interview, why do you call the upcoming Monday next Monday? I know some people call it next Monday, some people call it
instead
this
of Monday.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you tried to book a comedian for this show, which is nearly impossible. Like, we're not good at calendars. Yeah, I guess it technically is next Monday, right?
Right. I know people have this debate about it. So, like, some people say upcoming Monday is next Monday because, you know, like the Monday passed, so that's next Monday. Then other people are like, no, next Monday is the Monday after that. So people always have this debate.
Next Monday seems like too far away. I mean, that's just the way my schedule works. Where I'm like, if I say Monday, I mean like the next Monday. Okay. Yes.
All right. About 3 years ago, we played kickball together. And at the time, David Lewis, I think, was still editor of 614 at the time.
Maybe, yeah.
And as much as I love his writing and his distinct writer's voice, I have to hand it to you. You've made 614 a household name in Columbus, and congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. Although, to be fair, I mean, it was the area code before the magazine.
That's true.
Hopefully, all we've done is put a good lens on a growing, interesting city.
Right, right. And you can do a 7-4 as a follow-up, 7-4-0.
I don't know if we can handle expanding to another area code. Although one of our writers just went to Gallatin to watch the eclipse, and their area code is 615. So he strategically left a few 614 magazines in the racks along with the other local pubs.
Very good. So, but you've also added more publications. You have Stock and Barrel, and mm-hmm. now you do the annual Home.
Yeah, yeah. We're working on a couple different extra projects, but always trying to find a way to expand to, you know, there's a diverse readership in Columbus, and there's a lot of little niches to fill. So we're always trying to find different ways to kind of branch out. And you know, you could take pretty much at this point one topic in our magazine, and if you choose to, you could do a whole magazine about it. It's just, you know, flowering kind of in every sector of Columbus, it seems.
Right. But even with all this pressure and all this responsibility, I don't think I have ever seen you not smiling. So was comedy and humor just something you were born into?
You're saying you always see pictures of me jiggling with mirth?
Jiggling with mirth, exactly.
Jiggling with mirth, semicolon, guffawing.
Right. That was a quote from the Harvard thing.
I know. I've never sat for an interview where it's like, hey, here's a bunch of doctors explaining what laughter does to your brain. And I'm like, I thought I just liked attention. I wasn't doing this for any pseudoscientific purposes. I'm lucky. I don't know. That sounds really corny, but that's sort of true. I mean, a lot of times comedians and musicians and artists usually have kind of a dark side, and I used to feel like I was a fraud because not to say that I'm perfect or don't have a bunch of, you know, things wrong with me. I mean, like I said, I talk about my feelings into a microphone. It's not normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm a pretty lucky dude. I've, you know, like, fingers crossed, haven't had a whole lot of terrible things happen to me. So it almost feels like if you've got a good sense of humor or you've got a good spirit about life, it's almost paramount that you share that or try to, mm-hmm. you know, expand that in some way. But yeah, mostly, you know, like performers like attention. There's a, it is, like you're talking about the drug of laughter,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't even get into the high that you get from making people laugh.
Right, right.
I mean, I like to laugh, but you know, making a room full of people laugh, whether it's 8 or 300, is pretty incredibly mm-hmm. intoxicating. So,
mm-hmm. so now you're a bona fide comedian. It's interesting. You refer to yourself as a comedian, and you've been performing at festivals. You have your monthly comedy show at Little Rock that we mentioned earlier. And in general, I feel like comedy is just making this huge comeback from like the Eddie Murphy years. And what do you think there are these contributing factors to the rise of the super comedian? Because you see them, they're packing arenas. There's like millions of Netflix specials. Do you think it's something that the world needs right now?
Oh, yeah. And I think Netflix is one of the things driving that.
Mm-hmm.
The barriers to comedy. I mean, you know, I grew up watching. I mean, that was really the first time outside of talk shows that they put regular stand up, where you have like Caroline's and even at the Improv and things like that, where you could be sitting in Ohio and watching like top talent from yeah. LA on, you know, on regular cable. It wasn't this kind of like really untouchable thing. And I think Netflix and podcasts and YouTube has only just exploded that. But yeah, there is a huge push towards that. And maybe it's too because the traditional mediums have been slow to embrace change. You know, like if you look on the networks, there's still a lot of the standard like 3-camera laugh track / studio audience shows.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, while those are very popular, people are always kind of looking for the alt version of whatever's funny at the time. And yeah, I mean, I think I know what you're alluding to. Yeah, humor is definitely a salve. And I think especially when it kind of has connotations to the world around you and politics and society and culture, it's the only thing that's really untouchable.
So when I did research on you, which I do with all my guests, a little cyberstalking never hurt anybody.
Sure.
Your Twitter feed, however, has a different feeling to it. I would call it somber, I think. And so in general, we see Twitter maybe to be a harbor for maybe some evils and inappropriateness. But as a comedian and a journalist, and you're most likely someone who believes in free speech, do you think that Twitter should be a place where people can have that unbridled free speech?
I mean, free speech is also not really understood by everybody. I mean, you know, you hear that getting tossed around a lot, especially after Charlottesville, mm-hmm. you know, you're free to speak. It doesn't mean you're free from the consequences of that speech.
Right.
So, I mean, like, should people be arrested for things they say on Twitter unless they're directly threatening somebody? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But Twitter's a business.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter can shut down your account, you know, just like somebody can bar you from coming to a taping of their TV show, or you could be banned from Giant Eagle
right.
you know, if you walk into a grocery store
yeah.
and start harassing people. So, you know.
Or like Quinn Fallon the other day was like saying, you know, if you're going to come in here and you're not going to behave and be nice to people,
sure.
you're out, right?
Yeah. And like I said, people misunderstand the free speech part. I mean, you are free to speak however you want, but there's still consequences to that speech from time to time.
So when we spoke of David Lewis earlier, I saw that you had started a GoFundMe campaign for him and your friends. They had their home burned down, and you even managed to get their funding goal exceeded, which is great. My question about that is it dangerous, or is it like even like some type of downside to being a comedian when your friends or you witness something tragic that you have this kind of urge to say something to like cheer them up? And when sometimes people just want to be listened to, or maybe even make a joke that might be too early or too soon. Do you ever experience that as a comedian?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on how close you are to somebody. But I mean, any of my close friends, I've never not cracked a joke in a time of sadness or anger.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, of course. I mean, like, sometimes those are the moments that stay with you more than anything, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, like, because it can be used as that tool. A friend of mine, actually, I was with a friend of mine when he found out that his father was not his father. And we were like 17. And I cracked a joke, essentially, you know, I won't even tell you necessarily the joke, but like, it just kind of was like to probably as a young kid to break the awkward silence. And like, we still talk about it where, cause it was just such a surreal moment and we both just laughed. And you know, that was long before I started doing comedy. So maybe that's where it comes from a little bit, where you just kind of seize that moment. I don't know. I mean, I fill in more silences than I probably should, but that's just the nature of my personality. Right. And so, you know, like, how often can you fill something like that with a platitude of just like, hey, I'm sorry. And instead, what you can do is give them maybe like a slight relief from that. Yeah. Or plus humor too is usually about like how much you get the other person. Mm-hmm. And the other person can be your friend or your boss or your coworker or like a wholesale audience. Like it's a real subtle nuanced thing that I'm probably not at, you know, like I'm probably not the one person to speak about, but like it really is always just kind of reading the room, mm-hmm. whether the room is a person or an audience. You know, it really is just kind of, you know, because that could be obviously very, comedians don't really get that. They think, well, I said this and why are you groaning when the other person was talking about the same topic? It's never really the topic. It's about the delivery, about the person saying it. You know, like some people are just born to be inappropriate.
Right.
And they think inappropriate is funny and it usually isn't.
Right, right.
Funny is funny.
Right, right, right. So there is that difference.
Definitely.
Yeah. So you also have a way of using humor to kind of drive points home without seeming too opinionated or biased. I remember when I had asked if you were going to take a position about candidates in the previous election, you said that you weren't. Do you think that packaging heavy topics with humor allows for people to let their guard down a little bit and allowing the message maybe to get past those firewalls that they build?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I don't think you'd have the phenomenon that was Jon Stewart and The Daily Show. And honestly, and from that, Stephen Colbert and John Oliver.
Yep.
You know, it's there is a catch-22 to that because some people would, you know, on the journalism side, would lament that that is where maybe an increasing amount of people are becoming educated about topics. But yeah, but there's always been that in the culture, you know? Like, it used to be much more standard, like, here's a stand-up comedian like a George Carlin that's going to opine much more about politics and the globe and follies of man and things like that. And now, you know, there's this interesting blurred line between journalism and satire.
How do you feel about that as a journalist and a comedian?
I love it. Yeah. I think it's incredibly effective. Yeah.
I mean, I agree.
You still have to be careful. You know, it's tough to decide which standard you hold them to. Because you saw Jon Stewart would oftentimes get picked on by Fox News and they would say, it's unfair because you're not held to the same standard as us. So you could just say, whenever you're wrong about something, you could just say, oh, it's just a joke. But again, I think people like him, again, they have to read the room. They have to be beholden to their audience. And if those guys were consistently wrong or found to consistently pervert the truth just for a punchline, they'd be found out pretty quickly.
Sure, sure.
At least, I mean, knock on wood. I mean, as soon as I say this, there'll be an expose deciding that, you know. And again, oftentimes, too, they're analyzing things that are already fact.
Sure.
You know, if Jon Stewart plays a video of a politician putting his foot in his mouth and then makes fun of him, there's no, I mean, is there bias there? Sure. He probably doesn't like that politician. But he's not manipulating the truth.
Right, right. That's true.
You know, it's just doing what talk show hosts and satirists and columnists have done for years.
Right, right. Okay, so what role does humor play in a relationship? And I might add that you refer to your girlfriend as Pickles.
Yes, that is her nickname. Which actually, it's too long to tell the story on the radio, but actually does come from her love for Don Rickles.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Nice.
It's inspired by Don. It somehow became Pickles, but...
Nice. So does you think humor is something helpful or do you can sometimes be an issue? How do you feel about humor in relationships?
No, I think love is very serious. No, of course. Yeah, of course. I mean, how do you live with somebody and interact with them for, you know, 6 months to a year to 40 years without like getting each other?
Right.
You know, I mean, all for anybody who could do it, but I mean, like I can't be in a relationship if we don't laugh.
So I have a question. I watch a lot of stand-up comedy. My husband and I like to watch it. We do the Netflix and chill on Friday nights. And comedians just like I feel like there's like so much preparation and they're just like geniuses. I honestly feel that way. But I also feel, too, that comedians have, like, these great snappy comebacks, right? And is it because they think of situations ahead of time to predict what someone is going to say? Do they have, like, this Kasparov level of chess playing in their minds, like, to help them manage you know, how they're going to respond to things?
I mean, I can only speak for me, but I think it's kind of a muscle. You know, I probably always wanted to pride myself on being quick-witted, but I can't remember back far enough to know whether I was that. You know, I really don't know, but before I did my first stand-up comedy set, before I had seen a flyer on High Street a long, long time ago, and my friend had actually stuffed it in my pocket. But I think it was either after I saw that or I had been thinking about it, but I found myself watching talk shows, and when like Conan or somebody would be interviewing somebody, whether they were a comedian or not, but they had this funny back and forth, I caught myself trying to come up with something myself to say as if Conan was interviewing me.
Right.
Like, almost like I was trying to punch up like George Clooney's dialogue or something, whoever he was talking to. And I don't know where that came from. I don't remember. I don't have a memory before that of doing that when I was younger. I think that's kind of what it comes down to. And then if you get into doing that, it's just like working out a muscle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you'd, like even the Everybody's a Comedian thing that I do, which is audience members writing down joke responses to my questions, not any of my material. What that has done for my improvisational abilities, or, you know, like, and seeing how other people's brains work humor wise is amazing. But yeah, I don't know. I can't speak for everybody else, but you know, sometimes I will see comedians and think, that's genius. How did you come up with that?
Right.
And other times I'll see comedians who are really, really funny, technically funnier than I am, but I don't enjoy it as much if I see where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm. So only someone with a good sense of humor would be brave enough to open themselves up and their very large following on Facebook to Sarah Hara like you did. Is that how you say that, Sarah Hara?
Oh, yeah. I don't even know how you pronounce that.
So can you tell folks who are not on Facebook, the very few that aren't, and the many who don't know what Sarah Hara is, what that was all about? Tell us about that.
I almost forgot about that. I was just kind of like, that's the way it works on the internet now, where something's like a big thing for like a week, and you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, however you pronounce that, it was or is a website where people can anonymously give you constructive feedback. That's all it says. It just says leave constructive feedback. Yeah. I think I did it just because more than anything, it was fascinating. And it also had come right after I had had a conversation with one of my oldest friends who had told me how irritating I was to him on Facebook. And it told me, like, I'm leaving this website because you are so aggravating. And you know, like, I'm kind of big on transparency. At least I like to think I am.
Right.
I mean, I'm sensitive too, like anybody else.
Sure.
But I think there was something about the timing of that popping up where I was just like, huh, let's see if they're, and you know, for a while I had to stop myself where things would come through and I'd be like, who said, and I'm like, nope, you just won't know who said that. You engaged in this goofy thing. And so it turned out to be actually kind of a decent exercise of like, hey, you can take this feedback and take it to heart, institute it, disagree with them, whatever you want, but there's no further debate. You won't be able to like follow up with anybody. It was almost a good exercise to be like, it was almost a good exercise just to like sit with it and then just let it go. But they were all over the place.
So Sarah, however people don't know what that is you sign up and people anonymously can leave feedback about how they feel about you.
Yes. I think the only thing the little text box says is leave constructive feedback. Didn't you say constructive? I think it just says feedback.
And there's no holds barred. You can say whatever.
Apparently, yeah.
And that was good for you?
It was okay. I mean, like, some were weird. Like, somebody said they had a crush on me. Somebody said I should stop. Somebody said I should stop making fun of myself so much, which I disagree.
Well, that's also nice, though. That
was nice.
I would feel like the haters would come out of the woodwork, honestly.
I mean, I guess. I mean, let's put it this way. I think I'd be foolish to think that because that 1 week experiment was clean that I don't have any detractors. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know. But
right.
I don't know. I also have, I'm a bit extra focused on trying to make things right. So, I mean, if somebody has an opinion about me or the magazine or anything that's happened. It recently happened where somebody thought that a joke that I had made was racist.
Mm.
And that stuff I take very seriously. Mm-hmm. And something about that just moves all defensiveness to the back row. And it's just like, okay, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
I'll listen. So yeah, I mean, so I think that was the combination of me as a person who's in front of audiences and make something for a diverse readership where I can't, luckily I'm naturally that way, but I can't really be in a position where it's, well, that's your opinion.
Yeah.
Beat it. You know, like it's important. And not just a responsibility. It's just important to me personally because it'll probably drive me crazy.
Right.
I'm sometimes like jealous of the people that can just let something roll off their back. But because I'm like that, because I'm a little bit sensitive or like hyper aware that somebody might be upset about something, it drives me to have a conversation. And 99% of the time, you're glad that you did, because there's something nuanced came out of that.
I agree.
And I think most of the time people just appreciate if you just heard them out.
Right.
Universally, me or anybody, people just appreciate if you just said, okay.
You had an incredible Uber experience. The driver was a Christian rocker, Trey Pearson, and in 2016, you were in the backseat of his Uber car. And he told you his story, and you got him to get in the cover of 614 magazine. And in the article that NBC News did, he credits you being the person who kind of set him free. And, you know, being afraid of being yourself, of course, is no laughing matter. But did, in addition to the impetus of you telling him, you know, tell your story, you're going to help others, did you use humor to kind of lighten things up, to kind of alleviate his fears and anxieties to get him to agree to do it?
I've never really quite had a story quite like that, because we became friends after we met, before he had technically said, well, yeah, let's tell this story, because I liked Trey. I still do. And yeah, we crack jokes all the time. And I think it's when you go through something as life changing as he has, you've got to have that kind of in your toolkit. But no, I mean, that is real courage. That is real courage, you know, like, 'cause when I'm not around or when people aren't giving him a pat on the back for that story that we did together, you know, there's real life things that affect him on a daily basis that he's you know, still working through types of things with it.
Right.
So we're always trying to cook up fun ideas of how you can change what a magazine is and still kind of do it the 614 way.
Okay. The last thing I'm going to ask you, I'm going to ask you to see if you can do some improv. So,
oh dear God.
I had to.
Okay. I'm terrified.
In 2015.
Can we zip line instead?
Yeah, right. In 2015, you won the bacon eating contest. If we could make this into a joke, what would the punchline be?
The whole thing?
If we could, like, pretend like this was, like, there was, what would the punchline be if, like, you winning? In 2015, I won the bacon eating contest. Then what would be the punchline after that?
How about I'll tell you the funniest thing about that was,
okay.
First of all, when I won I thought I wasn't really trying. People don't believe me that. People don't believe me that I wasn't trying to win the bacon eating contest. Literally, that's just how I eat bacon. I was eating it pretty much at the speed that I normally would. Because look, I mean, like, you eat, I mean, first of all, when somebody makes bacon, it takes forever.
Sure.
And it's delicious.
Sure.
There's more than one person around. You got to eat as much bacon as you
Did
can
you
before it's gone.
Did you come from a large family?
What's that?
Did you come from a large family?
You mean, are they fat or how
no,
many
no,
people?
No, no, no.
Just how large a family
there
are we talking
you go.
Here? No, I was the oldest, but no, I mean, just in general.
But you
I mean,
know, like, there's family with lots of kids.
Yeah,
the kids got to
no,
eat really
No, we
fast
weren't at a trough. It wasn't quite like that, but seriously, I just ate the bacon at a speed that I was like, I mean, I was messing around, looking around, like dropping it in my mouth, like, ha, ha, ha. And then when I realized I was going to win, well, then I hammed it up pretty hard. No pun intended. Then I like jumped up on a chair and like raised the trophy. And it was like bacon stains
That's
on it.
That's awesome.
But yeah, the funny part was I actually did a comedy show after that.
Did you?
Yeah, I came back home. I lived behind my favorite bar at the time, and I put the trophy on the bar, and I was like, here, find a place for that. And then I went and did stand up.
That's great.
People were like, are you okay? Did it mess? I was like, I've eaten more bacon than that in a sitting before easily, just for, you know, just for a Friday. No problem.
Great. Well, clearly you're a winner, Mr. Haywisher. And thank you for sharing your winning spirit and your comedy with us today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
you.
It.
A spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. The medicine go down. Medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way.
And that's our show for today, folks. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Maria Greif, and you've been listening to U Inc. on 90.5 WCBE.